national treasure.
Absolute treasure.
Yes. Oh, well, yeah, we've talked about LeVar Burton on this show because I told you my story about going to the Geekies when he sang.
Yes.
He sang Reading Rainbow and everybody was like.
I mean, Star Trek Next Gen.
Oh, duh.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. We've never. Okay. So real talk. We all watched that growing up.
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. That was like the family show.
My parents still have them all. We're talking about Star Trek, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I was talking about Reading Rainbow. But yes, also Star Trek Next Gen.
Yeah. For sure. Like my parents had them all on VHS. I think still do. And they have like the collector's ones.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I remember when the Star Trek Experience opened in Vegas. I was living there. I grew up in Las Vegas. And when the Star Trek Experience opened, which was this massive thing on the strip, this like whole building that was like dedicated to Star Trek, like immersive experience, my parents let us skip school.
Yes.
Like we didn't go to school and they took us to the Star Trek Experience and we spent the whole day there. And it's like people walking around in costume.
That's so cool.
It was so cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's up on Netflix. I've already gone through it once, but like it's just so comforting to me. So put it on.
There's just such nostalgia.
Yeah.
First and foremost, right?
We have Fuck, Married, Killed Next Gen, right?
I feel like we did Will Wheaton
and Riker.
Commander Riker. Yeah. And then
and Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
But yeah, people sleep on LeVar Burton.
Oh yeah.
I loved him with that, like, you know, with front headband situation that was going on. Did you not do that? Like, headbands were so big in the
90s. Oh, my God, yes.
I did that on more than one occasion.
Oh, yeah. So many occasions.
Down in front of your eyes, and then you pretend to be LeVar Burton in Star Trek.
Yes.
I really do think it was just a spray-painted banana clip.
100%.
The department was just like, took one of them, spray-painted it silver, and was like, and that's
good enough. Yeah, that's good enough.
That'll do.
No one will even notice. It's fine. And we didn't.
But yeah, I never had a crush on Will Wheaton. That wasn't.
Oh, I did.
Oh.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Really?
Oh, yeah. You did.
Oh, I did.
I mean,
like, we're the same age. So it, like, was one of those. I mean, my heartthrob crush, though, was number one. You know.
Picard?
No.
Riker. Me too. Riker was.
No.
Way.
Hell yeah.
Those eyes. Ooh, that beard.
God damn. Mm.
Hattie. He had good hair. Mm-hmm. He had real good hair.
Speaking of, I don't know if we talked about this already, but have you guys seen Picard on CBS?
No, I heard it's so good.
It is so good. It is. If you loved Next Gen, you will love Picard. It is really, really good.
That's it. I'm going to check it out. You're like the sixth person to have told me that.
It's incredible. I'm sure Chris was one of those people because we thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed the shit out of that.
Well, I need right now like a show that isn't the shit show that we live in daily. Like I really need to turn the news off.
I
feel like it's been on for all of this year.
Yeah.
And I am at my threshold.
You're peaked.
You know what you should watch? And I was going to save this for the end of, you know, what we're watching. But I started watching Dairy Girls.
Oh,
my God.
Is it kind of like a Call the Midwife situation?
No. It is a comedy.
Okay.
And it is like, it's Irish. So it's like Ireland in the 90s, like whenever they were still split. So there was like a lot of conflict between like Protestants and Catholics.
Yeah.
But it is a full on like comedy, like silly, silly, but so well written and so funny.
Nice.
Like, oh, I love it. I was watching it and then Anthony came in and sat down and, you know, I need a show to watch without him. So I was watching it without him and then he sat down and now I can't watch it without him because he loves
it.
So if you want something that's kind of just like escapist and light and well written.
I started watching it. I got into it for like a few episodes, but it was very leavable for me. You know what I'm saying? Like I could leave it.
Well,
and it was just
the
like,
thing about it is I don't feel that way. I blew through the first season because it's only like six episodes season. So I blew through the first season like one day.
Yeah.
And I see what you mean as far as like it's one of those shows where you can kind of jump in anywhere because it's not consecutive.
Okay.
You know, it's a show like that where like you don't have to have watched the episode before to get the episode you're going into. But I think it's so well written. It was definitely written by the comedians.
Nice.
Yeah. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of like just like random stuff, you guys The Craft Legacy.
I don't know.
I watched it.
Did you?
Why?
Oh, I did.
Okay. Because
I was curious.
And?
Why would they do that?
It is such a shitty movie. It
really?
Is such a shitty movie. Now, granted, it's been a long time since I've seen The Craft, so I don't remember if that's sure. a shitty movie sure. either.
I've or seen it recently. Yeah.
I just remember it kind of fondly because we were teenage girls. Mm-hmm. There are some key differences that I thought were really interesting. I do remember in the original ones, the girls turned against each other.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, fast forward through this, or if you guys don't want to hear, plug your ears and go la, la, la. The girls stick together on this one.
Well, that's nice. Something.
So I was just like, man, that's really interesting. And maybe, and I was thinking, I'm like, I feel like there is way more girl power, girls unite in this generation than in yes. our generation.
Yes.
Right. And I thought I would say that so. Was the only thing nice.
The only
I
redeemable quality.
I mean, if I had to say that if there's a weakness to the original The Craft, it's that they turn against each other. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't. And you know what? I feel like tonally it was weird even at the time. Like, because I rewatched it not very long ago. And yeah, there's like a certain nostalgia factor. I think mm-hmm. those of us who watched it, grew up with it, are going to look at it more fondly than those who didn't.
Right. I actually think that would be a fun fuck, marry, kill is to do different witches. Like Fairuza Balk in that movie is creepy.
Crazy.
Yeah. But I would say, I think it does hold up. And I don't know why they needed to remake it. Like there are some movies that are like iconic cult classics like that, that I just feel like you should just leave alone.
Oh,
I don't know why.
They definitely set it up like they're going to make multiples.
No, I just.
My friends. Cliffhanger ending. I don't like a cliffhanger ending. No, it was so cringe. I'm not joking, not being hyperbolic at all. Within the first minute, Eric and I turned to each other and we're like, this is how this movie's going to go.
Right.
And we were 100% right. Like detailed, accurate, within 1 minute, you will know exactly how this movie is.
Well, that's because it was made for 14-year-olds.
Right.
So you're like.
Even still, I'm just like, oh my God. Like there's nothing in it. I now hold that. It almost beats out one other movie. The worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
My was like Blair Witch 2.
Oh, God, yeah.
I did not even watch that.
It was bad.
It's still number one in my heart, worst movie I've ever seen. This one comes close. That's how much I did not
enjoy it. Well, let me tell you, I don't remember which service it was on. I think it's Hulu. Cats is available.
Oh, I saw.
It's available and it's free and we should watch it.
I saw.
Still haven't seen it.
I think it's on HBO Max. It's probably on HBO Max, but that's not where I saw it. It's definitely somewhere else as well. Because I was like, look, we're coming up on the 1 year, Annie.
Yeah.
I think we owe it to ourselves and our listeners to watch that movie.
How did this get made? Is doing that movie next?
Oh, stop it.
Dude, the one they just did this week is so fucking funny. I've never heard about it before. It's called Governor Gabby, which, and I'm like, well, I ain't watching it for sure, but I will definitely listen to you guys tear it apart. And did they ever? And it is fuck, I'm literally like laughing now. I have my headphones in cleaning all day today. I'm just crying laughing.
That's
so
awesome.
So if our listeners don't know, How Did This Get Made is a podcast where they watch really terrible mm-hmm. movies mm-hmm. and discuss.
Oh, so
and that
good.
Is always the best.
And it's Paul Scheer and Jason Mantzoukas mm-hmm. and June Diane Raphael.
Yeah, it's so freaking brilliant. So what about you guys? What are your least favorite movies?
Oof.
You know what? I feel like I watched something semi-recently that I had a very visceral negative reaction to. But the one that stands out in my mind, and I don't think anyone saw this movie.
Okay.
But I watched it with my brother, and I feel like it had like some critical acclaim. And so I was like, it's probably going to be all right. It was called Blindness. And it had Julianne Moore.
Yes.
And
you know
Mark
why I know
Ruffalo.
That? Because it's one of my favorite books of all time.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh shit. Coming in hot.
I love that book. I love that book. The movie.
Did you see the movie?
Ooh.
It was garbage.
Bad.
Oh my God.
Real bad.
I didn't read the book.
I love the book.
And it had big names. It was like, you know, those two, I think maybe Forrest Whitaker or somebody else was in it.
Mm.
And the premise was interesting. But the movie was almost unwatchable.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, please, Lord, when will this end?
High key, recommend the book. Jose Saramago is a brilliant writer. It's a really, really great read. And maybe not for 2020 because it's about contagious blindness,
yeah,
basically. And how...
I'm not interested in that. Yeah. Thank you. Nope. I'm going to skip it.
How
not
humanity
for 2020.
Just like devolves. If you take one of our senses away, it's just really easy for humanity to devolve like within a week. So, yeah, I know it should have made a great movie.
I feel like it was maybe one that was difficult to capture on film. Yeah. Like it was hard. I feel like
maybe
probably
if it was more like a series like they did with... what's the one where they cover their eyes?
Oh, is that the Bird Box?
Sandy Bird Box.
That's
a movie, though. Oh, they didn't. I'm just thinking maybe like if it's one of those stories that could have been a series, might have been made better.
I don't know. I think it's probably, it struck me and let me know, Christina, as one of those like book adaptations that probably had a lot of internal dialogue.
Yes.
Yeah. Where that's really hard to translate film because they're trying to show
stuff
you.
Happens. But yeah, a lot of the motivation and the like, yeah, it is a lot of internal monologue and it does not translate to film well. No.
No.
What about you, Cass? Least favorite movie.
Okay. So least favorite movie. This is going to be a hot take because I, like you, read the book first. And then saw the movie. So I think this is part of it. But the other part is I just fucking hate this movie.
Okay. I like how you set it up. Okay. We're like, no one get offended, but also this movie is trash.
Forrest Gump.
Oh.
Okay. You know what?
That is a hot take.
I know.
It is a hot take.
Some people's top movie.
I can also see that. I can see how it could be something that someone doesn't like. I enjoy it, but it is really long. For me, Forrest Gump is a one and done watch, you know. No, God.
The book, though, is really... And the thing of it is that the movie is so long because he does do so much. But in the book, he does so much more, which is wild to think.
Yeah.
But the book is just so well written. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I thought the book was real fun.
Yeah.
And
the movie's kind of a Debbie Downer.
The movie was
major.
Just... I don't know. It just... I don't know. It's one of those things that Chris and I early on in our relationship agreed on immediately. We're like, we have to marry each other. We're the last Bengals fans. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure we're the only two people in the world who loathe Forrest Gump.
Wow.
So,
loathe.
You gotta
I really hate that
movie. It is hard to date somebody if you have completely different media enjoyment.
True.
Like I've had to compromise and watch a lot more horror movies than I would like to. It's not my favorite, but I do it out of love. And to be honest, like everything else that we watch, we're pretty like...
You did make him watch Love is Blind.
I did. He was not happy about it. So, you know, even Steven.
You know, it's good for the goose, give and take. You know, I saw this TikTok that made me think of you. It was so funny. It was like this guy going and sitting down at a movie theater. And it's like me at a horror movie. And he like sat down. He's like eating his popcorn. And then it said, based on a true story. And he was like, oh, no, baby, that's not going to work. And he like got up and left.
Nope.
And I'm like, that reminds me of Christina. She's like, I'm not inviting these real life demons into my house. It's not happening.
Nope. Not going to do it. No, I was looking for stories today and I was reading one. It was like a high school story about a kid that like he let his date like pick the movie and she picked Insidious and he got too scared or whatever.
Oh no.
There were a bunch of people from his high school there and he got made fun of for the rest of the year for being too scared at
Insidious.
Okay. And
Insidious is scary.
It's okay.
I will not watch it.
Yeah. So
Insidious rated really high on that like
fear.
Yeah, that fear test that they did. Yeah. They did like a scientific test of like which movies are the scariest. And Insidious rated really high. So I'm like, it's all right.
I'm just glad we're moving into Christmas movie season because we watched what did we just watch? Oh, Family Stone.
Oh, right.
For our Patreon.
Yes.
And then Eric had a hankering to really watch Four Christmases.
Oh.
I was like,
that one's silly cute too.
Very surprised that you like this movie. I'd never seen it before.
Real talk.
Really likes that movie too because he brought it up to us and I was like, oh, okay, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
we get it.
I mean, like, I haven't watched that movie since it probably came out. I don't.
I haven't either.
I don't even remember that movie at all.
I'm willing to watch it again to
it
discuss.
Just didn't
I mean,
stick.
It was cute, but it surprised me. You know, it's just like, okay, I wouldn't have thought that would be like a movie high up on your
I right. took down.
It's his Love Actually.
Oh, it's about that time. I got to watch Love Actually again. I took down my Christmas box today.
Yeah.
I actually took it down. It's sitting in my living room. I bought a candle last Christmas, after Christmas. I went to the Bed Bath & Beyond. Mm-hmm. No. Body Works.
Bath & Body Works.
Bath & Body Works sale where Always. They like, you know, after post-Christmas
like
sale.
A fire sale.
Yes. And I bought a new Christmas candle, which I started burning today. So my house smells like icicles. It's amazing.
You brought over snickerdoodles.
Oh, I did. I'm getting ready for my Christmas baking.
This year is the year. And I've seen a couple people post about posting, like putting up the Christmas tree. I'm like, yeah. It's 2020.
I never do that.
Do it.
Yeah.
But you're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to enjoy it for a full 2 months.
Yep.
It doesn't mean you don't like Thanksgiving. People have this like thing about like war on Thanksgiving, you know, like you can't put it. Like, who cares? Whatever makes you feel of joy this
agree.
Year.
Agree. Honestly. I usually wait till Thanksgiving to put my tree up. I usually do it the day after Thanksgiving. Just that's my tradition.
Yeah.
But this year I'm like, you know what? As much joy as I can get.
Get it.
As quickly as I can get it.
My dad got us banned from a Kmart.
Oh, well,
I think
right.
he told us
you
this.
You told us the story.
For getting in a very loud discussion with the teenage manager about Christmas decorations being out before Thanksgiving.
I feel like this is like the gather round, kids. Christina is going to tell her
tell
yearly story. I feel like,
just, like
you have to. It's because
tale.
It's wild that
and
that
like,
happened.
Even at like 8, I still knew. I'm God. Just like, this is not his job. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was not up to... You know, whatever his
Jeff.
Name is, Andrew right. or whatever. He's not CEO of Kmart deciding when to put the fucking
what
displays out.
What is it about older people? Like, what is it? Like, my grandpa, same. Like, I remember being a kid and we were like in a McDonald's and he's like yelling at this guy in a McDonald's. And I'm like, I remember being like 8 or 9 and being like, it's not this man's fault. Like, please stop yelling at this guy who makes $9 an hour.
Oh my God. We keep saying this is not an advice podcast, but if I can give any of you advice, anyone you're complaining to, it's not their job.
Mm-mm. No,
it is not their decision. Mm-mm. It wasn't up to them. Mm-mm. They're making whatever kind of pittance to enforce rich man on a yacht at an Eyes Wide Shut party's
yep.
random fucking idea of the business. You yelling at them is just making both of you miserable. So just stop it.
It's going to get you kicked out and banned for life from
exactly,
a Kmart.
From
That's
a Kmart.
What's gonna happen.
Exactly.
That's what's going to happen.
And your dad, when Kmart went bankrupt, he's like,
I got mine.
He's like, finally.
That's hilarious.
Shakes fist at sky.
So I do want to do a quick plug, since we're talking about Christmas movies. We are going to be doing for our $5 and up patrons our monthly movie, Crazy in Love movie, which I have chosen Twilight. I'm going to make these ladies watch Twilight. It is a terrible movie and I can't wait to discuss it with you because there are some very toxic relationship issues in that movie. But we are also planning on doing a bonus Christmas Crazy in Love movie for all patron levels. And we're going to do Happiest Season with Kristen Stewart and Dan Levy. I'm very excited.
I'm excited too. I fucking love Dan Levy so much. I love Dan Levy so much that I love that TikTok guy that does Dan Levy impersonations right? just because
he's
I'm
perfect.
Like, he does such a perfect. I wish I knew his name. I actually just downloaded TikTok because I had a $1 million idea. You guys don't know it yet, but I'm going to be a TikTok star.
Okay.
I cannot believe it doesn't exist.
Okay, don't say it on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm not going to. I'll tell you guys in the break, but just keep a lookout on that. I'm going to be an influencer in my next life.
I can't wait for you.
I'll be your manager.
I'm so excited.
Oh, so who should we fuck, marry, kill this week? Actually, first... This is My Worst Date Podcast. I'm Christina.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Cassie.
Also, we have a new patron.
We do indeed. Yes. So we got a new patron. So we want to give a big shout out and thank you to China Lam. Welcome to our patron family. We'll get your Patreon rewards out to you as soon as possible. And if you have any suggestions for things that you would like to see on Patreon, please let us know. We have some fun stuff coming up. We're actually going to shoot some things for Patreon here soon. So we're super happy and excited to have you, China. Welcome.
Yeah. So... who we fuck, marry, killing this week?
Oh, gosh.
Could do. I mean, my dad closed down Kmart, but what are some other closed brands? Like Circuit City?
Oh, my God.
Radio Shack?
Blockbuster.
Blockbuster.
There's one Blockbuster that's still open. Have you heard about that in Oregon that is letting people stay the night there?
Dude, I mean, marketing geniuses. They're selling merch. They're doing events there and stuff. I mean, they're smart.
Selling,
very smart.
They're selling your childhood back to you.
Like
they're selling nostalgia. Yeah. That's what they're selling. But yeah, let's, okay, we can fuck, marry, kill like old chains that are dead and gone. But I gotta go, I gotta go Blockbuster then if we're gonna do that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm doing Kmart.
Family loyalty.
You're like, and shakes fist at sky.
I gotta do it for my dad. We have, let's see, is JCPenney or Sears
still
bankrupt?
Open? Nope. Yeah. Still around.
They're hanging on by a fucking thread. You drive by a Sears and it looks like a ghost town, but they are hanging on.
Tower Records. Yeah. That's my choice.
That's your choice? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay. So Blockbuster, Kmart, and Tower Records. Wow. Okay.
Dude, I remember saving up my allowance to go buy CDs.
Oh, same.
And shit.
Yeah.
You know, all those like CD stores.
Mm-hmm.
And also, how many of us signed up for that 12 CDs for a penny and then never like fucking paid?
I think that was Columbia House,
Columbia,
wasn't it?
Columbia Club or whatever.
No, thank you.
You know, my dad
just
started doing that 2 years ago.
What?
Legitimately.
No way.
He is in Columbia Club. He's just now buying CDs.
He's the only one. 2 years. It's just he's the sole member.
Yeah. He's got his members only jacket. Yes. The only member.
I'm like, Dad, where are you getting all these CDs? He's like, I joined a club.
Oh. And they're thrilled. God. They have one guy doing all the jobs for Columbia House.
He's just buying like freaking Led Zeppelin CDs.
Sweet angel.
I know.
Ugh. God bless his heart.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So we've got Tower Records, we have Blockbuster, and we have Kmart. Fuck, marry, kill.
All of our Australia listeners are going to be perplexed. I've told you on this podcast before, I think that like Kmart is like a big deal in Australia.
Oh, is it?
It's like Target.
I feel like you're right.
Yeah, it is. It's like Target.
They had
there.
A glow up down under.
I guess so. That's what's keeping them afloat.
I love that.
Good for them.
I love that for you.
Like, I love that journey
Stella
for you.
Stella got her groove back.
Yes. Oh my God. Someone please Photoshop like a Stella wig.
Okay. Okay.
I think I know.
I do too, I think.
Yeah.
I'm certain, actually.
Yeah. I think I am going to fuck a Tower Records because you can't marry a musician.
No.
You can't do it. You know, Tower Records is going to break your heart for sure. He's going to love you and leave you. Mm-hmm. So I can't in good conscience marry him, but it will be a good time, a good fast time. And then I'm going to marry Blockbuster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I just want to snuggle up and watch movies. Mm-hmm. That's all I want to do. And I spent a lot more of my time in a Blockbuster. Actually, we had a Hollywood Video. I don't know. In my town, we had a Hollywood Video. Mm-hmm. And I spent so much fucking time in Hollywood Video just getting and returning movies. So it's very nostalgic for me. So I'm going to marry Blockbuster. And yeah, I don't need a Kmart. I have Target. I have Kmart's hotter brother.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Cassie, you want to go or you want me to lay it down?
I was going to do the same. Or I was going to do different, but kind of leaning toward the same. You kind of got me on that like marrying a musician thing. Mm. But I really want to marry Tower Records.
Well, you know what? It's divorce is an option. So
I just marry feel him if you want. Like Tower Records. There's it's layers for me. It's albums, it's vinyl, it's gritty and has the feels, and then, you know, I don't know, there's layers to
the floor is sticky, right? And you don't know why, because they don't even serve food in here.
No, don't ruin it for me, Keegan.
it's okay. Look, we've all fucked a guy who's basically a building with sticky floors, and that's all right.
Yeah. Oh, man. I don't want to marry that guy, though.
Yeah, dude, I'll tell you what marrying Tower Records is. I actually thought
Blockbuster was going to be
carrying
more.
It's carrying amps. If you marry Tower Records, you are at some point going to help cords. Somebody carry.
Yes, you're wrapping cords.
4x10 amp. Into some club.
Yep.
You're gonna have to be one of the only people there.
Fine.
We just ruined that fantasy.
No, you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna fuck Tower Records. It's gonna be filthy. It's gonna be dirty.
It's gonna be in the back of a van that has no windows.
This van's a knockin'. Don't come a knockin'.
Yep. Somewhere outside Wichita.
Oof.
Dreams coming true.
It reminds me of that video, All I Want to Do Is Make Love to You, where she like gets knocked up by that guy.
Oh my God. Oh, blast God. From the past.
Okay. So then I'm going to marry Blockbuster, I guess, because it was going to be different. It was going to switch around. I was just going to say it was going to be hours of fun, because it would be.
Yeah. Do you remember so much fun to go to Blockbuster and look through the new arrivals? It was the best.
Yeah. Blackbuster.
I don't remember that place.
Wow. That's a very fun place. Yeah.
I don't know about that place.
No, but Blockbuster does keep it fresh and spicy, because they've always got those new arrivals coming in, you know?
Always keeping it fresh.
Keeping
got
it interesting. Yeah.
They got snacks.
Got red vines for days, bitch.
Yeah. You got to marry. We're all on the same page. Okay. We're marrying Blockbuster.
And I got to, I'm going to kill Kmart. It's fine. And shake fist at Sky.
I'm going to fuck Kmart.
What's up?
I'm telling your dad.
You know what? That's what this is about. Your dad got you kicked out of Kmart, and now you're getting back at him by fucking Kmart.
Oh,
this is a daddy issue situation.
Oh, shit.
I'm like, dude, I remember when I was little, I actually, like, because, you know, growing up kind of poor, we didn't go to fancy stores or whatever.
Girl, Odd-Lots, bitch, please. Dude, you was fancy going to Kmart.
Same, but we would get a lot of our clothes from like thrift stores and stuff like that. But once in a great while, we would get to go to Kmart.
That was the most Midwestern I've ever heard you sound.
Childhood, I was like, that's where the fancy clothes are. That's where the like, you know what I mean? So there's like a part of me that's like, it's going to be bad. It's going to be one of those moments. It's like when you swipe on a guy, you're all excited, you go to the date, and it's like that knockoff. You're like, oh, it doesn't quite look like his pictures. The end of it, it just goes downhill.
You know what Kmart is
to
me?
You build it up in your mind, and then the layers come off of it.
Yes. Kmart feels to me like that guy in high school that you idealized, who was real sweet, who had maybe like a middle part kind of floppy haircut, who was very, very nice to you. And still, when you fuck, it will be very nice. He will be very nice to you, but it will be bad. But you will always have a soft spot in your heart, because you're like, he was so nice.
Ryan, he was nice to me.
He's like a good first time.
Gentle.
You know what I mean?
He's fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I gotta kill Tower Records. Like,
wow.
I know. I'm surprised the amps.
You got burnt by the amps.
Yeah. I am surprised by that. Your days of carrying amps are over.
Yeah. You done.
Those are behind me.
I'm surprised, because if anybody was gonna pick a sticky floor, I thought for sure it was gonna be Christina.
Same.
I mean, I still kinda got one with marry Kmart.
If anyone's gonna pick a man bun, I really would have thought it was you. Oh.
I was like, yep, but she's marrying that.
Cassie and I are more likely to come out of this with an STD, and you're going to be just golden marrying Blockbuster, the only surviving sister wife to Blockbuster. So
there you go. There you go.
There you go.
Well, you guys want to take five and we'll come back with stories?
Sure. Sounds good. And we're back.
Okay. I'm going to start us off. I got this from Reddit. So she says, I'm going to start here with the biggest dumpster fire, my creepy neighbor. Met online, and when he picked me up, he says, oh, I thought I recognized this address. I live right there. He proceeds to point to a balcony with a clear view of my house.
I don't like that.
And what? Straight into my living room.
What?
Already getting murder vibes. I decide not to poke the murdery bear, but to make it through this date and then just never talk to him again. wrong.
Where you live.
Yeah, no, there's no getting out of this at this point. No. He knows where you live. Not
let first dates know where you live. Honestly, meet neutral.
There are too
place.
Many creeps. There are too many
Way
creeps.
Too many. Yeah. Mm. He takes me to a local upscale pizza joint where he orders himself a pound of wings and eats all of them himself.
How much is a pound?
Feels like a lot.
It sounds like a lot. Like maybe it's a deceiving amount. Like maybe it's not as much as we think it is, right. But it sounds like a lot.
I mean, bones weigh something. I don't know. Maybe like 12 wings. But still, like we've talked about.
That can't be 12.
I think it's more than 12.
Yeah. We've talked about food that is good on like a first date. Now,
wings is
dude,
not.
I fucking love chicken wings.
Me too. Can get down on some chicken wings.
Eric and I love chicken wings so much. First of all, we freebase the Hot Wings show on YouTube. I love that show. Have you guys seen
the
it?
The Hot Ones?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good. We ordered those hot sauces. They're coming Monday.
Oh, shit.
We're going to have a chicken wing off. We're going to see who pusses out first.
I just have to say to you,
Chris
though.
Coming? Can I just watch?
I have to just put this out there. Mm-hmm. You live in an apartment with one bathroom.
Yes.
So beware.
Oh, it's going to be bad. Poop God. Knife time. So he orders himself a pound of wings, eats all of them himself while telling me I'd be much more attractive if I were slimmer and that I should come to spin class with him. Also,
I'm sorry. Sorry, when you first said that, I thought he was talking about himself. He's talking about her.
Oh, yeah. No, he's pounding chicken wings.
So he's just got Frank's Red Hot all over his fucking face.
Yep.
And you're criticizing me, motherfucker?
Yep.
Oh, the rage.
He starts talking about how the spin class instructor is a total babe and his dream woman, which is great first date combo. He then describes his penis in detail. Telling me how much I'll love it.
Nope.
Because the average vagina is only 7 inches deep.
Okay.
As if I don't own a vagina and have lived with it for 20 odd years.
Okay, what 4chan like forum did he get that info off of? Like, he was like, I don't know, Trevor on 4chan told me that a vagina is 7 inches deep. Like, oh, go fuck yourself.
Also, yeah, it's like, okay, talking about a penis on your first date. First of all, penises are like, I don't talk about my vagina. On a first date, like a detailed description of my vagina. And I certainly wouldn't do it while sucking on chicken wing bones. It's just weird.
And
to
they're not that interesting, nor are they that rare. I mean, they're everywhere.
There's a dick everywhere.
There's a dick on every corner.
He then takes out his phone to show me a variety of sex toys and encourages me to purchase some while also giving me reviews of his favorites, along with play-by-plays of his use of them with his ex-girlfriend.
I hate this person so much. Sir.
Oh, I have never been so relieved as when he dropped me off home finally. I couldn't have left that car any faster, and I thought that would be the end of it. Oh, fast forward a week later, I was sitting on the couch watching Netflix when I get a ping from a number I didn't recognize. It says, what are you watching?
I no.
Look out my window and sex toy McChicken Wing is sitting on his balcony looking through my window and waving at me.
No. Sex toy McChicken Wing. No.
Thank God I moved a month later.
No.
Ugh. Can you imagine?
I fucking hate that.
Yeah.
Okay, so my story came from Reddit as well, and it starts out, I had already been on 3 dates with a guy, and they were good/normal. I invited him to join me on a big group weekend camping trip, mistake number one of many.
I want to know how long they were dating. That's always the question for me, is I'm
like 3 dates.
Okay, 3 dates. Oh, okay.
Dude, a trip with somebody is so, there's so much that goes into a trip, and then you're going to multiply it by 10 by fucking camping,
and you're with your friends, right. So you're already like high anxiety. Yeah, it would be a no for me, but in my head,
camping trip is fun, and I think with Fred, I don't know if you've been on 3 dates with somebody, you're
if
having
they
a good
were
time.
Good. Yeah, I mean, depends. I can see it happening.
She
me
does say
now.
I was so dumb in my early 20s.
That's exactly
so
what
that's
I was gonna
thing.
Say.
It's
I was
an
like,
early
me,
20s
yeah.
thing. Me
yeah.
now,
me yeah. now is a no, but like me in my early 20s is a probably. Yeah.
Yeah. We set up camp, spend all night hanging out, and everything was normal. Next day, everyone floats the river. I see one of the second day arrivals is a college friend that I hadn't seen in a couple of years. So I maneuver my tube over to him to say hi and give him a big smooch on the cheek. My date goes berserk. He berates me for kissing another man, screams at me in front of everyone.
Bitch, I will leave you up this river. Do not test me with that shit. I am not here for it.
I'm also, like, can you imagine if like we're hanging out as a friend group and Eric Jesus. Starts screaming at
Do
me?
You? Oh, no. No, 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 no. Not in our group.
Not in our
not
group.
Not today, Satan. Not motherfucking today.
Not in front of me. Oh, absolutely fucking not.
I wish a motherfucker would.
I wish you would kill him.
I mean, the guys in our group would kill him.
Woods.
Yeah, you're in danger.
Sir.
You in danger.
Sir.
Like, we have guys in our group who would, like, that flip would be switched. That switch would be flipped immediately with some of the guys in our group. Step up. I swear to God.
Yeah.
Could you see Emerson's face?
That's what I was saying. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm thinking is like that flip that switched face. Immediately.
Like, the eyes go black.
Yep. And you're like,
I see all
fuck.
The turnt heads like,
you said what now?
Yeah. No.
I'm like, chill. It was a kiss on the cheek and it shouldn't have mattered. But this friend was gay. So I told him that, thinking it would calm him down because it was I was like legit scared. He calms down slightly, but then he just has to tell me that he thinks being gay is wrong.
Okay, we're done here.
We're done here. You can call an Uber to come pick you up in the middle of buttfuck nowhere.
Exactly.
Goodbye, sir.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Oh my God. No. This is so awkward.
He throws another tantrum and disconnects his tube from the group and loses it.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye. Oh my God.
Do you know how fucking embarrassed I would be too?
Oh, Jesus.
I'd want to die in those woods.
And
it's
I slump right through that hole in the tube.
You're like, I'm sorry. I had no idea I brought this.
But okay, if we're using you as an example, we would all know that like there's no way that he's acted like this before. Like,
No.
Because Christina would not have brought him around us.
That's right. Mm-hmm. When I came back, he was at the campsite and I try to make good because I'm still scared. He acts normal for a while, then loses it when I apparently spend too much time talking to another guy who is married. I'm like, there's his wife. He decides to go back to the tent and sulk, and I hang out with friends and keep drinking. When I'm tired, I go to retrieve my keys to sleep in the car because, of course, I wasn't going to sleep in the tent next to him. No, he's hidden the keys. I ransack the tent, and he just sits there smirking like an idiot. I keep searching and getting more
Girl,
frantic.
Girl, it's time for you to call your friends, all right? Call the friend brigade because this motherfucker's outnumbered.
I demand them from him repeatedly or I'm getting some friends involved. Then he's like, oh, here they are, and tells me I better not drive off and leave him there. I was semi-drunk at that point, so I didn't since I couldn't. I should have left him there in the morning, but I felt obligated since we were a couple hours from home. He berated me the entire drive back. I have never driven faster in my life. Blocked him as soon as I dropped him off. What a fucking psycho.
Dude, exactly. What a fucking psycho.
Also, I added the fucking, but I feel...
It was warranted. It really was.
It was necessary.
I mean, I almost feel like maybe it was a blessing you took him camping.
Yeah.
Because maybe that's what it took to
you
get his true colors.
To waste like 4 months of your life. You didn't have to catch feelings, like none of that stuff. Maybe we're wrong. That's why we're not a dating advice podcast.
Maybe
that's
we're wrong. You know what, guys? Maybe take him camping immediately.
Take him home to meet your family.
Oh, Jesus. And then send us the story.
Yes. And it goes terribly wrong.
We're going to get worst date podcast at gmail.com.
Exactly. We're going to get sued. Yeah. Okay, so here is another server story.
Yes.
Oh, I love a good server
story. Love a good server story. All right. I wasn't a server. Okay, so it's not a server story. But
literally the first
Legitimately.
Line. The first thing.
But, I worked at the fanciest restaurant in an upper middle class suburb, middle class fancy.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of place where house moms go to get drunk on Thursday nights.
Chili's.
We know exactly what that is like. Anyway, one night, one of the servers I was working for, I was a busser, points out this table to me and just says, listen in on this table. It's going to be a long night with them.
Ooh, juicy. Juicy. Dude.
I'm going to grab the vacuum.
Not all heroes wear capes. Mm,
that's right.
Looking out for you in this long, long night.
Yep.
The table had what looked like it was a pair of cousins out to dinner with both sets of parents. So I was originally confused why they were going to be such trouble. I went over to bring them bread and I could immediately tell what he was talking about.
Oh, shit.
No one was talking, but they weren't even looking at their phones. Everyone was just tensely staring at each other. It was so palpably awkward, I left instantly. That would be me if you've been in a situation where you're like, the secondhand embarrassment or awkwardness is so intense that there's an orbit around it.
Yeah.
It's an atmosphere.
Oof.
I went about my menial duties for about another 15 minutes when a conversation at the table finally came up. Mm-hmm. From the bits and pieces I put together, the two kids we thought were cousins were actually dating and their parents were meeting each other for the first time. Oh. So basically, nightmare situation for both kids who looked about 14.
Oh, God.
At some point in the night, the daughter decides she's comfortable with jokingly calling her boyfriend a dumb jock. And to this day, I refuse to believe that that girl has ever made a bigger mistake. Immediately after the words left her mouth. Immediately after the words left her mouth, the boyfriend's mother loses her shit completely and starts driving into the girl, cussing her out, calling her a whore, a slut, and pretty much every single awful thing you can possibly say to a teenage girl.
Oh my God.
In front of her parents.
Food fight.
Oh, God. I was pouring water.
My dad would.
Oh, can you?
No.
Imagine.
Abso-fucking-lutely not. My dad would fucking.
You called my daughter what now?
Make a few phone calls.
Oh, yeah. And also, why are we doing this? If they're 14? Wow. I mean, I don't know. I never did this. I don't know. But I never really had like a serious boyfriend as a
My mom didn't teen. Let me date when I was 14, so.
Yeah, I can't imagine being around. First of all. Yeah, no, I can't imagine being 14 with my parents, with a boy and his parents.
No.
I literally want to crawl like out of my skin.
At the middle class fancy restaurant?
No. Yeah, no.
No, no.
No.
I was pouring water at the next table over at the time, and I managed to spill it all over the table because of how loud her outburst was. That'd be me. I'd be like, fully listening.
It's just, you keep pouring and it's just full.
Dumping over.
They're like,
sir, ma'am, okay. Ma'am.
No, it's over. Yeah, no.
Enough. When? When?
Time. Uncle.
The girl and her parents left pretty quickly, seeing as the girl was crying her eyes out and looked absolutely terrified. And wouldn't you know it, as soon as they left, the boy and the father turned on the mother and released a near identical stream of vitriol on her. It was so bad, I wouldn't be surprised if they got a divorce.
Jesus.
All things considered, I think that may be the worst date I can imagine for a 14-year-old.
Why haven't they written in? That's what I want to know.
Oh, goddamn.
I need to know from their point of view.
I mean, that shit scars you.
It does. That's a shame receipt for sure. And
wow.
I also am like so upset that I haven't seen a scene that juicy in a while.
What was school like on Monday? Like, goddamn.
Oh, my God.
He's like, Jenny, please talk to me.
Nope. They all moved. Different school.
That's what you do when you're 14.
That's right.
You can just like
just move to a different school. Homeschool.
New life.
Now I'm a new person.
I'm not Jenny anymore. I go by my middle name, Marie.
There was a couple girls in school that did that. Now I'm wondering if they went on this date. That's funny. Okay, so I talked to you guys before about my crazy in love, about just procrastination city. I had like there's like four different articles about four other cases on my phone before I started watching last night in a fit of just, I just need a break from true crime. But then I saw Netflix had just released a new true crime documentary series called Trial 4. And I was like,
I don't know about this.
And it is so good so far. I'm only three episodes in. If you enjoyed, and by enjoyed, I mean if your face got fiery hot and angry at making a murderer, it is another thing along those lines.
I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can do it. Like, Making a Murderer was one of those where I was, Anthony was probably pissed at me because I was pausing it every like 5 minutes because I was just like, what the fuck? Like I was just, like yelling.
It's a what the fuck story for sure. But this is not the case that I'm doing. However, it mentions this case in that show.
Okay.
So
intrigue.
That's what I spent today doing. I watched an episode of Dead Wives Club starring Lorraine Bracco on ID.
Oh, I which love is, Lorraine Bracco.
She's amazing.
Amazing.
And her as a narrator. Chef's kiss.
Oh.
I read an article called Presumed Innocent in Time by Margaret Coulson. Another article in the Boston Globe called Twisted Dream by Mark Barnacle. And so we will get started. And I know you guys know this case.
Okay.
Oh,
but
okay.
Let me set the scene.
Okay.
It's October 23rd, 1989 in Boston, Massachusetts.
Boston. Okay.
Boston.
This is why Lorraine.
Exactly. There's a 911 call that comes in. The gentleman on the phone is telling the 911 dispatcher that he's been shot and his wife has been shot. And they're in the Mission Hills neighborhood of Boston, which is a predominantly African-American neighborhood. He said they had been carjacked and he didn't know where he was. So is his wife, 7-month pregnant, Carol, and she was shot in the head. Charles or Chuck was shot in the stomach. And you can hear
lucky
the
for him
13-minute 911 call as he's driving through the neighborhoods. Now, since this was 89, this was before cell phones and before they can locate his GPS. And
so he has a car phone?
He has a car phone.
Okay.
So they're trying to find him. The dispatcher's trying to get clues from him.
I really wish the listeners could see, like, I wish we had a camera because both Cassie and I have never looked more suspect in our entire lives. Like, sir.
So he's driving around. He's been shot. He's bleeding profusely. And he keeps telling the dispatcher that he's going to black out. And finally, he stops communicating. But the dispatcher's smart enough that he tells the police to run around the neighborhood with sirens on. And that's how they finally locate him.
Because they can hear him over the phone.
They can hear him over the phone.
Nice.
So, oh, smart.
I love this lady.
Yeah.
Or guy, whoever, whatever.
Now, 89, I was 7. And I particularly remember not this case, but cases like this. Because Rescue 911 shows up on the scene. And this was big in the 80s. Shows like Rescue 911, Cops, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the reason why I ended up wanting to tell this story. They arrive on the scene just as they're showing paramedics getting Carol's body, obviously pregnant, out of the car and into the ambulance. There's pandemonium, police everywhere trying to figure out what's going on. Chuck is like, just pay attention to my wife. Forget me. Go help my wife. Go help my wife. They're getting him finally into the ambulance and police are like, what happened? What happened? Give us a description. Chuck says it was a black man with a raspy voice.
Shocking.
In a tracksuit. And he, you know, he took my wife's purse and her wedding ring, shot her in the head and he shot me once at me, but I ducked and he missed and then he shot me in the gut. And so they're like, all right, we're on it. So who are Chuck and Carol? They're this Camelot couple, which first of all, like the next day, the media goes fucking bananas. Mm-hmm. It is the biggest story because it was captured on Rescue 911.
And she's pregnant.
And she's pregnant. They're this beautiful young, I mean, Carol was only 24. Chuck was 30. They were this beautiful couple in the Mission Hills neighborhood. And then the Boston newspaper the next time had a photo, like front page photo of Carol slumped over in the seat.
Holy shit.
And him shot, like bleeding, everything. And with the title was A Terrible Night.
I remember this now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember it, but I remember I've watched something where they talked about this. Yes.
Yeah. And so, I mean, people are literally clutching pearls and like, oh my God, like this is a suburban nightmare. you know? Mm-hmm. You go, they were coming from a Lamaze class. And someone got in at a red light and carjacked them. And now this beautiful pregnant woman dies at 3 a.m. in the hospital. Listen,
not to say that it's never happened ever, but that doesn't... So when I say this very broadly, know that I'm being a little hyperbolic. That never happens.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. Like, that is so... That is such a... I want to commit a crime that's going to like make headlines. That's going that the way that we think it happens, like on Matlock. You know what I mean? Like it's such a weird way for a crime to happen, and of course it got this kind of like, you know, news coverage.
Yeah, yeah. So Carol, whose maiden name was Carol DeMatey, she was this poli-sci major that ended up having a career as a tax lawyer. She was described as very affectionate and loyal. She had a job waiting tables while she was in college, and that's where she met the cook, Chuck. You know, Chuck was making $4.80 an hour doing like line cook stuff, but right. they instantly like fell in love. Chuck is the oldest in his family. You know, he has three younger brothers. He's just kind of like just total Boston and gregarious and fun. And they felt like Carol fell head over heels with this guy. He's handsome. She's pretty. Everything seems perfect. And he's got ambition. So he went from being a line cook. He ended up padding his resume a little bit, saying he had to drop out of Brown University. He was on a football scholarship and messed up his knee. And that's
gotta
how
say, kind of a genius way to pad your resume, because they can't. I mean, right, they're not right. gonna. They're probably not gonna call Brown and be like, "Was this person here and did they drop out?"
Right, you know? Right, right.
And you don't need to provide like your degree or whatever.
Exactly. So he ends up getting a job as general manager of this really fancy furrier company. And, you know, I was like, wow, you can make that much money, like being a manager of furs. But yeah, he was pulling in over 100 G's a year.
Whoa, in the 80s?
Well, it was because fur was big in the 80s and fur is expensive.
Yeah. But he just had that personality. You know, he was like a salesman. He was attractive.
Yeah.
He did well with like the older, richer Boston ladies selling furs. And so they were able to move from like he's from this section of Boston called Revere. They bought this beautiful house in Reading. They got married in 85, and so now it's 89. They're expecting their first kid. It's like legitimately the perfect family. Neighbors would say like he would give her a kiss outside, like some Leave It to Beaver shit every day. They went jogging together.
Not buying it.
I know. Me and Cassie looked at each other like,
yeah, so
come on.
Everyone was like, they were the perfect couple. And not only that, like, we're talking her friends and stuff too. And they're like, we would have known if there were problems. If she had a problem, like, Carol was the kind of person that, like, would not sugarcoat stuff.
Right.
She would tell you how what she had for breakfast and how it tasted.
But you would be surprised what people conceal in their relationship. Like, it's not the same as telling you that you're displeased with your, you know, morning oats. You know, it's your relationship.
Yeah.
And you see it as a reflection of who you are.
I will share my displeasure with my morning oats before I will ever tell you anything personal about me and Chris's relationship ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
A lot.
If anything is going wrong, Christina may be the one lucky person in the world who happens to fucking know. And that would be, I mean, like, I am fiercely,
very private.
Fiercely private about shit like that, because my thoughts on it too are this. And it always comes back to that place where, like, when you complain about like a boyfriend or something, and then you're like, especially mad at them, and then when you don't leave that, then it looks like you're the dickhead who didn't leave her situation, because you know what I'm saying. And it's just my own personal story that goes through my head,
because there's other ways to look at it,
but
too,
I can understand this where you're like, I'll tell you about how bad my oats are, but I'm gonna tell you about
different people are different and they process things differently, and some people are very open with their friends about like stuff that they're going through in relationships, and some people really aren't, and they might be open about a lot of other things, but they're not open about their relationship. So, you know, she might have been very open with them about a lot of stuff, but maybe there was things going on, you know?
Yeah. So the police on the scene were actually like, there's pandemonium and everything. But the one thing that they notice is that there's no gun at the scene. her purse is gone. Her wedding ring is gone. And they're in the middle of a crime-ridden neighborhood, or what they perceived. There have been several shootings and that sort of thing that had happened in the previous months. So they're really like, and Chuck is badly wounded. He is like shot through the gut. He's going to be spending the next few weeks in the hospital if he survives. Carol at that time is still breathing, but holding on by a thread. So they really, you know, it's really difficult to say, like, it'd be one thing if the gun was still at the scene, but at that precise moment, they're like, okay, we don't have any reason not to believe his story. So they go bananas. They, 100 cops, like basically any cop that's free goes and searches the area, tries to find anything. And they don't find anything that night. But after the media frenzy that happened that next morning, it goes national. And any cop who's anybody goes into Mission Hills and it becomes a fucking war zone. They start stopping and frisking up to 150 black men between the ages of 50 and 30 a day.
Wow.
A day. Trying to find. Because that night at 3 a.m.
Gotta love stop and frisk.
Yeah. Carol.
But not at all racist policy.
Exactly. Carol passes away. Her baby is taken out by C-section. Baby Christopher lives for 17 days.
Wow.
Chuck has to go through multiple surgeries. He'll be wearing a colostomy bag for the rest of his life. Like, police are talking to him, trying to get more descriptions. And he does. He does give them a little bit more.
This sounds about white.
Yeah, a little bit more descriptions.
Tell me if that didn't happen to a black couple that we would even have this conversation.
Well, that's,
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be this person, but because it just pisses me off. Because this neighborhood is riddled with crime, but nobody's heard about it until white people get hurt.
And that's the thing is, like, I didn't want to say it because I was just like, I feel like I'm so happy that this woman got this kind of attention. Like, everyone deserves that. Everybody deserves that. To get that kind of attention where everybody stops what they're doing and looks for you. But not everybody gets that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, and I feel
especially then.
And I feel like a big reason why she got that is because she was this beautiful woman in this couple with this.
They had money.
And they had money and she was pregnant and they were in a black neighborhood.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. People lost their minds. Like, Governor Dukakis attended her funeral. Like, it was huge. Hundreds of people were mourning. Everyone was just like praying that Christopher and Chuck like came through this. It became a national story. It really played into people's fears at that time, stuff that we were watching on TV. Mm-hmm. We all watched Cops.
We all watched
Rescue 911, where the story was like, you could not go into the big bad city, right? The suburbs are safe, but the big bad city and the dog whistle is fucking real in those shows and on news. The perpetrator was described as an animal. Like, it's really difficult.
Do you know
to watch
how many times in the 80s people came out and were like, a black man did this thing to me? It happened so fucking often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, not that it never turned out to be true, but a lot of times there's many, many documented cases of people lying.
God, I remember going, my mom worked in campus at Ohio State. And I remember when we would get, like, we'd drive in from home, and by the time when we would get into a certain part of campus, my mom would be like, lock your doors.
That was the thing. And I think a little bit of us was exposed to that narrative by watching programs like that.
Hugely.
You're taught that it's not safe to go into the city. You're taught that black people are criminals, black and brown people are criminals.
This is what people are talking about when they say that you have a implicit bias. You have something that is not conscious.
That's right.
Right? Like, it's not, when people say that there is racism in law enforcement, and you can cut this out if you want to, but when people say that that's what's happening in law enforcement, they're not saying that everybody in law enforcement is an out and out fucking like Klan member, right? But there is just we as a whole, and I'm telling you this as like a half black, half white person who has had to deal with that same implicit bias against black people,
right?
As someone who half of my family is black.
Yep.
And I still have to deal with that implicit bias because it is burned into our culture.
Right.
It is burned into our society.
Yeah.
And it's not something that is conscious. So don't get in your feelings when somebody tells you that this is something that you may have to grapple with, come to terms with, and work through, because it's something that we all deal with. And law enforcement is one, not immune to that in any way. Two, it's probably heightened because they're in dangerous situations all of the time.
Yep.
You know, so it's just something that I think that people need to like stop and analyze. You know, and not be so emotional about.
Yeah, it's that's the biggest thing about this country that I've seen deteriorate, I think, in my lifetime. And I'm not that old. I'm 38. But I remember when it was an actual strength to admit that you were wrong. And
wasn't my house.
To be open to new ideas. And that makes me the saddest, I think, the last few years and the advent of the internet and everybody has to be a fucking expert or something in anything. It's just people not being okay to be wrong. And nobody wanted to be wrong about this story. This story was a good story.
Of course it was.
It fit the narrative.
That's right.
It fit a media panic and fear that sold papers and sold ads and all of that stuff. So when you want to look at what is popular and what the narrative is, think about who you're making money for. And fear sells papers.
It's so frustrating to me because I feel like a lot of people point to the 80s and 90s as being this kind of post-racial utopia. Like people point to this shit. I've had people tell me that Obama is really what stoked, you know, the racial division in this country. And while it may have been something that brought it to the forefront, to act as though racism wasn't an issue in the 80s and 90s when we had a war on drugs in the inner cities that focused specifically on black neighborhoods, targeted them unfairly.
You don't see it now.
Like all of this stuff.
You see a war on drugs now that it's a white people problem.
Oh, no, now it's a crisis.
Yep.
Right? Now it's a national crisis. It's just frustrating for me when people kind of, because it was marketed that way, right? We had a black Power Ranger, right? You know, there was a black kid in every TV show. We had a token black character in the Rugrats, right?
When token became a thing.
We're fine. Everything's fine. We're all getting along and it's a fucking like Benetton ad. When in reality, there were policies that were being put in place and there were narratives that were being spun on the news and otherwise that were creating a lot of issues specifically for the black community. So anyway, sorry to go off on a tangent and proceed.
No, I knew this one was going to be a thing. And I want people to hear it. And I want maybe part of me wants people to be a little bit uncomfortable, and that's okay. It's okay that you're uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable watching it and I was very emotional about it, and it led to some soul searching, and you know, maybe it'll get to you too. So 150 a day are getting fucking
stop and frisk. Yeah.
Their rights violated. It's and I'm not talking just stop and frisk. We're talking strip searched.
Jesus Christ.
Like it's
full violation
Yeah. So they finally find a guy named Alan Swanson, who has been arrested for like drug possession and off and on. He's just kind of one of those that people that are on a list at the police station of like, pick this guy up if a crime happens because he's a likely suspect for anything without any evidence or whatever. So they end up finding a black sweatsuit that's like soaking and in his place, and they're like, well, it's you. And they fucking arrest him, but it's not sitting right. By this point, there are a couple of people that are starting to feel icky about something, and they can't quite put their finger on it. The Boston Herald gets an anonymous tip. It's a letter that just says, listen to the 911 call again. Really think through it. And they're like, okay. And nobody wanted to. These people, when I tell you everybody was on.
Like a really well done movie.
Everybody was on this couple's side. People were cheering for them. People openly wept. Like at Christopher's death, at Carol's, like
I really want to know what that phenomenon is. Like, what is that? What's that phenomenon where like we as a culture become so invested in one case?
Look at JonBenet.
Exactly. And it's not to say that these cases aren't worthy of our emotion, because they are. But what is that? What is that where we like we get one thing that everybody collectively gets hooked on? Because these types of things happen every day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be some like magic combination of like how people look, how photogenic they are. And they're both very photogenic. They were both well liked and well off. And, you know, again, it fit the narrative of the time in the 80s that so many places
were. Could be you. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. What they're feeding is this could be you. This could be your family. There's a lot of middle class fancy bitches out there.
And they're feeding those deep seated fears that you're not consciously or like saying out loud. Those things that like you're like, low key, I'm scared of the blacks. And look, this happened to them. So that could have been me in the inner city, you know.
So Boston Herald does listen to the 911 call again, and they actually go through where he says he was at when he called 911. They're like, this is a busy, well-lit street with lots of people out on a Monday night. So if he's there and he's calling 911, the 911 operator constantly tells him to stop and get somebody else to get help, you know, on the street. And he's like, there's no one around, it's dark, blah blah blah. And they're like, well, this is like a really busy street even on a Monday night at this time where you'd be driving. So there's some stuff that people start questioning, but like editors and shit like that don't want anything about it. They're like, nope, like cut this shit out immediately. Like, you're done investigating that. We're not printing any of that shit. Like, go fuck yourself. Like, we're praying for this dude to recover. But the police really can't, despite him having a random black sweatsuit, they can't fucking nail anything on Alan Swanson. So
he didn't do it?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah. So they end up finding another person on their like most likely suspect list, Willie Bennett. Willie Bennett is somebody of extremely low IQ on the streets. His IQ is like 65.
Wow.
Yeah. And he had been arrested and accused of shooting a cop before. And the reason why they go pick him up is apparently his nephew had been bragging around the neighborhood that his uncle had done this. And Willie does have a kind of raspy voice, and that's it. That's the only reason. So police end up showing Chuck a picture, and they say he emotionally reacted to it right away.
What the fuck does that mean? And are you trained to be able to say that? Also, I'm sorry. Show me where your training is.
Show that picture to anybody right then, and everybody would have emotionally reacted to it, because apparently their pictures were every fucking where.
Yeah. So They end up like waiting until December 28th. Chuck's finally like out of the hospital. They do a lineup. He is able to ID Willie again. But this is after Willie has been in the paper like every single motherfucking day as a suspect for this crime.
That is so fucked.
So
this is why I don't watch shows like this.
Okay.
Because this shit makes me so fucking mad. I'm like furious.
So on January 2nd of 1990, police show up at Carol's parents' place, and they're like, do you recognize this ring? They're like, oh my God, that's Carol's diamond. Where did you get this? That was robbed from her. They're like, we can't say anything, but is this a ring? They're like, yes, yes. They ID it. They get a call.
Curious.
That night from Chuck's brother, Mike. And he's like, I can't really say anything right now, but tomorrow's going to be a really bad day. And I want to say on behalf of my family, I'm so, so sorry. So January 4th at 4:30 in the morning, there's a car that's on Tobin Bridge in Boston with its hood up, abandoned. It belongs to Chuck Stewart. And he's nowhere to be found. There's a note inside basically saying he couldn't take the allegations that were going to come out about him. And
he your escape is plan, gone. You motherfucker.
So the media reports it the next day. They're like, oh my God, this guy was so overtaken by tragedy that he committed suicide. And then they immediately have to put their foot in their mouth because it turns out that a couple weeks earlier when his brother Matthew had realized that Willie Bennett was going to be indicted for murder, goes into the police station, is like, I have a story to tell you. My brother Chuck hired me to help out with an insurance fraud. And so he told me to meet him at this time and place. And I did. And he threw a bag in my car and I drove off. And apparently put two and two together. And he's like, I had no idea he shot Carol or shot himself. Like, I couldn't see, blah, blah, blah. And you can argue the veracity of that all you want. There's plenty of evidence showing that he was, I mean, how could you miss,
right,
Carol in the front seat bleeding or whatever? But he says he drove off. He heard about the crime later that night, got a friend to drive to a different bridge and throw her purse and the gun, but he kept the ring. He kept the ring.
Sorry.
As an insurance policy for himself.
What kind of insurance scam did he think he was running?
Exactly.
Where you had a purse, a gun, and a ring.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of scam did was this not explained to you?
It was just like a jewelry scam. And he was going to get $10,000 from his brother for doing that. And they all looked up to their older brother, but he just couldn't. His story is he couldn't take the fact that an innocent man was going to go to jail.
Okay, but you can handle an entire community being like upended for months and vilified for months on end. That's fine.
Exactly.
Okay. I mean, look. Thank God. Like, he did the right thing in the end. Thank God. At great cost to his family, really. But however.
Well, I think from the digging that I've done, what happened was apparently the entire motherfucking Stewart family knew about it from jump. So these people were pallbearers and carried her fucking casket.
Disgusting.
They comforted her family.
Disgusting.
These people,
I literally have no fucking words for this bullshit.
Were so doting on Chuck that they were so worried about him. The day he committed suicide, they were so upset because he was supposed to.
Wait, did he really commit suicide?
They found his body a few days later.
I thought I was like, this is all a scam.
So the story just starts to come out in pieces or whatever in the media. They're like, what the fuck happened? He did it. Is what it comes down to. That night, he purposely drove to a quiet part of town and he shot his wife in the back of the head and then messed up because he supposedly was supposed to shoot himself in the foot is what they were thinking, and fucked up and shot himself in the gut, like almost killed himself, and then tossed the bag to his brother or whatever and went through this whole charade. And honestly would have gotten away with it if it weren't for the story leaking out. Like, Matthew, I think, went to the cops because the story was getting out. People outside their immediate family started to know.
I think he probably didn't intend for the story to become as as huge as it did.
And that's why he kept the ring as an insurance policy to himself, mm-hmm. to protect himself from going down, like having his brother like go down on him. So the big question was why. People could not believe this. People couldn't fucking wrap their head around it as much and as easily as they could wrap their head around a random carjacking.
You can't wrap your head around a husband killing a wife. The tale as old as time.
A hell a lot more mm-hmm. common.
Yep. Yeah, it really did come down to the fact that he wanted the insurance money. He was dating a 22-year-old that he was working with, and he wanted to open a restaurant.
He killed himself because his 22-year-old girlfriend, he knows, was not going to marry a colostomy bag.
No.
He didn't kill himself because of the guilt. He saw the walls closing in.
Yeah, it wasn't guilt. He killed himself
because he felt bad.
It wasn't guilt.
Yeah, he saw the walls closing in. He wasn't going to get away with it. He was going to spend the rest of his life in jail, and he's just too fucking self-absorbed.
And at that point, like, you have this fucking, like, house of cards of lies. So it's not only are you going down for this, it's like you're having to own up to months and months of lies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and people do not like being lied to.
No, and they don't like feeling, because, no, I'm not going to say it. Never mind. Go
I
ahead.
Was like, I have, never mind.
Never mind.
Yeah. So the story then becomes like, who knew what, when,
right.
You know, which bothers me, but I don't think is the main part of the story. The main part of the story to me was how easily people were willing to accept something that fit their narrative without really digging in. And it cost a lot of people. It cost a lot of people. And the one bright part that comes out of the story is the DeMatey family ended up raising over $1 million and created a scholarship in her name that they specifically give to a Mission Hills resident.
Mm.
And had That's done lovely. So for 25 years.
That's lovely.
And they do it. They don't want her to be remembered for that one night in 89.
That she really had nothing to do with.
That she didn't have anything to do with. And they God apologized bless them. Deeply to the neighborhood. And they were lied to.
God bless them.
And they did something positive. So the one positive thing that comes out of it.
Honestly.
I swear to God, why is this like not a movie that I have seen? Like, I swear this is like prime. For like a really good retelling.
They have had a TV movie. I forget what the name is.
You know what I'm saying? Like how they did on the Boston.
Right. Mm-hmm. Where Spotlight. Yeah, you want like a Spotlight level.
I want a Spotlight mm-hmm. level movie because that could
well,
be this.
What I'll say is, Christina, I have seen documentaries about this before and I've never been more mad than I am right now. So I feel like your telling of it was great.
Yeah,
because
really good.
And maybe it's just where I'm at mentally or emotionally right now, but like this kind of thing, maybe it's just because I'm such a justice-oriented person as same. Well. This kind of thing makes me madder than anything.
Well, look, it's about the truth. It's about the story, and you know, in these trying times, TM, everybody's found a narrative that
we
they
make
like.
It these trying times, TM. Sure,
we should. Mind. Oh God, let's do that for Christmas, guys. Yes. Watch out for that.
Everybody's found a narrative that fits their own comfy bias, and. I think this story affects me as much as it does having grown up and being an 80s kid and having gone through the work to confront and deal with my own implicit bias and doing that still daily with the things that we are going on in this country and seeing anything that hasn't changed since the 80s is really difficult and emotional. You know, anyone that thinks that we're any different or any better than we were in 1989.
We are not great. That's for sure. Not again. Not then.
Not then. Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, yeah, it's just, you know, and the other thing is I'm glad I found that silver lining is that you do have the opportunity to do turn something around
to make a choice. Good, to make a choice. You can make a choice. I think that that is important. It's like, yes, all of us have preconditioning. We have conditioning from our society. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who you are. There is conditioning that exists based on how you grew up and the society that you were brought up in.
Right.
That's just true, and there's no use denying that.
Right.
Just don't deny that. However, when something comes to your attention, you have the opportunity and the choice to do better.
That's right.
So
I mean,
I'm
42 years old and I still confront myself with things on a regular basis, because you're never too old to do that. Mm-hmm. And the thing of it is that the world moves rapidly, things change rapidly, and if you can continue to still grow with that.
Yeah,
right?
And it's okay to be wrong.
Like, I remember when you could say the R word without calling it the R word, because it's so offensive now for me to even consider saying somebody is a...
Well, yeah, and I think that the difficult thing to come to terms with is, like, it was always offensive. But it's just that we now
it was
know
acceptable that now it is, that we know we that know it is, better do better
and we're doing better now.
That's right.
Right? Like,
know
that's
better,
the
do
thing.
Better.
It's like, I'm not mad at you for saying it when you were 12.
Right.
But you know better and you're doing better now.
That's
the point. Is like, if you know
which is
better,
why I'm glad and thankful we didn't have that, you know, social media spotlight on us, or the record of some of those past things that we may have said to follow us. You know, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard, because I think there is something to be said about, you know, forgiveness and if you can truly see somebody is knows better and does better. But
you can forgive, however, you need to be able to acknowledge that you fucked up.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Everybody in this story, every fucking media outlet who glommed on to this story and took it and ran with it because they saw an easy headline that fit their narrative, that was able to typecast an entire community as villains and criminals, all of those people need to have a reckoning with themselves. 100%.
That's right.
Like, yes, you made a mistake, but that mistake is detrimental to an entire community of people, and you need to take responsibility for that.
A community of people. This has been detrimental to the entire narrative of an entire generation of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only are you talking about this community, not only are you talking about the wider Black community, you're also talking about the narrative that has been fed to the white community, in which we have had living as a little nugget in the back of our brains that has been okay. And it's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
So I think that, you know, that's the thing, is that there needs to be a reckoning, not only for us to claim that we have been misled, that we have been given stories that aren't true, but also too, you're right, the media needs to own up to the fact that they've been delivering on a message to create hysteria, to create.
Well, it sells.
That's
it
right.
sells. When you come down to it, I don't think it's done with any other sin than greed.
Mm.
Greed. It sells. So, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that they wouldn't do it at all.
That's right.
If it didn't sell fucking papers. So
that's
think
right.
about that. When you spend your money, you can easily change the media if you decide to boycott stuff that's fear-mongering.
Mm.
So,
well,
yeah.
Let's change the subject, you guys. Let's talk about what we're watching.
Well, I told you, Trial 4. It's really good.
I don't
it's
think I can.
Really I will not be watching.
So
I cannot. Thank you so much. But I
give you a little taste.
I'll just go back to my Dairy Girls and feel very comfortable and happy with that. Oh, you know what? And Christina, I wanted to bring this up for you because I don't watch this show. However, how many times have I watched the preview for season 4 of The Crown?
Oh, I know.
Oh my God.
It's so good.
I don't even watch that show.
I haven't started yet. I'm going to binge it tomorrow. That is legitimately my Saturday plans. Eric's going back to Bakersfield. And I'm like, I literally will not put on pants.
Wait.
I will be Postmates sushi.
Do you
want to
come over and lay in my bed?
And fucking watch.
Or wait, or do I come over and you lay in your bed and we just sit and watch TV all day?
Oh my
dude,
God.
Dude, Gillian Anderson is Margaret Thatcher.
Gillian Anderson is a queen.
Stop it. And we have Princess Di coming to the fore, you guys. Ooh,
I'm excited. I'm excited.
But again, I don't watch The Crown, so I've just
so
watched that trailer a bunch of times because it looks fantastic. But I did, other than Dairy Girls, And just kind of, I caught up all the way on British Baking Show. Mm-hmm. I started Girlfriends on Netflix.
Yeah.
I fucking love that rewind show. I love that show, but I will say the first few episodes are...
Tracee Ellis Ross is so cute.
She's adorable. She's everything. So adorable. But the first few episodes are real cheesy. And the first season, the intro to that show is... I'm like, who was in charge of this? It's like you had each of them come in, stand in front of a green screen, and you're like, just dance, just freelance, kind of like free form dance for like 5 minutes, and we'll cut pieces out and use it for the intro. Oh. And it is the most cringeworthy thing I've ever fucking seen in my whole life. But the show is bringing back all kinds of like nostalgia. 90s, early 2000s feels.
Cringeworthy. We rewatched Too Funny to Fail, which is about the Dana Carvey show. And the fucking moment where they do the preview for the home improvement show that happens before, and it's like, it's such a heartfelt preview, or like sitcom heartfelt preview of fucking Tim Allen being like, you're not gonna die, son. And they're like, and after that, the Diet Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey show.
Oh, God.
And just Stephen, if you like Stephen Colbert,
wow,
and
it's so good. It's real good.
It's so worth, and Steve Carell, it's worth watching.
It's so brilliant.
The funniest documentary ever.
It's really fucking good. I actually saw that. All right. I am so glad I'm going last
for what I'm watching.
Okay, so besides watching a bunch of old movies like The Net and Murder by Numbers.
Murder by Numbers is one of my favorites. I own it on DVD and I watch it probably once a year.
I legitimately have watched a bunch of like, I watched The Pelican Brief. I've been like into like these old like, you know, late 90s, early aughts. 90s
crime law dramas the jam.
In Murder by Numbers, when Ryan Gosling licks the side of her face.
I literally made a gag noise.
He licks the side of Sandra Bullock's fucking face.
It's gross.
Yeah.
Okay. But what I'm here to tell you guys about, and willing to give you the login for my Sundance Now account, because it is, I'm telling you, if you don't fucking watch this, like you didn't watch Bosch.
Oh my God. She's never going to let that go.
I will not let that go. I will not let Bosch go. It's still here.
I'm sorry.
But I'm telling you, if you liked Marcella.
I did.
If you liked Broadchurch.
I loved it.
I love Broadchurch.
And if you wish they were. Okay. Julia Stiles.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which I love, and I know that you're kind of on the fence about, but she's fucking great. Like,
okay. I'm talking, I feel like Christine is on the other side of the fence about
I'm talking
her.
Like Born Identity good. Okay. Not like, okay. All right. Riviera. It's just started its third season, so you don't have to like binge for 40 days. It's literally like 26 episodes right now. It's so fucking good.
It's called on Riviera?
Riviera.
On Sundance.
I will tell you this. Yes. The first episode, I'm kind of like, okay, but then it leaves you at a cliffhanger. So you're like, well, you got to watch the second episode. And so it leaves you at another fucking cliffhanger. And you're like, God damn it, I got to watch the third episode. By the third episode, you are so fucking wrapped up in this story. It is an enigma, wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in it. I'm telling you, this show is so fucking good that I was like, Chris, if you don't fucking immediately watch this right
now.
Wow,
what an endorsement.
Dude, it is so good. It is so good. I literally couldn't stop binging it.
Oh,
I could not stop.
Well, I know what I'm checking out.
Damn,
all right.
I will be sending you my Sundance login.
Where's our sponsorship? I feel like we should have a sponsorship.
Julia,
for that.
Call me. So season one, Julia Stiles, the girl who plays Irina was also the girl who plays an alias Irina, who plays what's her name's mom.
I can't remember her name.
Oh, did you never watch Alias?
Oh.
No, okay. Me neither.
But I'm like, it's funny. Anyway, not a bunch of notable characters other than like, I know you'll know Julia Stiles. But in the second season, Will Arnett is in it.
Oh, and I like him.
It is fucking like, it's bonkers. This show has everything. It has murder. It has family scandal. It has everything. It's got money. It has fucking Nazi art. It's
damn, that took a turn.
Yeah, no,
it's
joke. Like,
it's like all right, murder, Nazi mystery. Art. It's fucking so good.
Okay, all right.
And honestly, I will tell you, like by the first two episodes, I was kind of like, where is this going? But it gets so fucking intriguing, and it just layers itself.
They should hire you, Cassie. They really do. Should.
Good. I feel like. I don't even remember the last time I saw you that excited.
I know.
About like, anything.
Really?
Bosch. I believe Bosch.
Bosch.
Oh, okay.
I believe Bosch was when.
Well, but if you've got a story to tell, or if you've got a show that we can watch, but only if you love it as much as Cassie loves Riviera, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's mywordstatepodcast.com. And we love you so much.
Cheers.